The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wowee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. And joining me again this week is Glenn McFarlane. And Macca, it's been a massive year for news stories, hasn't it? With, you know, Buckley, Eddie, and now Clarko joining the exit doors, and you were out at Hawthorn last Friday for what was another extraordinary twist in this story. And I must admit, I totally misread the Alistair Clarkson story, and kudos to Caro and Sam McClure, who insisted that he wouldn't be there next year. That's what eventuated on Friday when Clarko said, see you later.
Yeah, Mick, thanks for having me. It was an extraordinary day out there. I've spent some weird days covering footy stories in the past. That was right up there with one of the weirdest. You know how cold Waverley can be? And it was a very windy day, so it was bizarre waiting for what we knew was going to happen. I think you're right when you say, perhaps we did misread it a little bit, but what we probably did do is we took people at their word. And in that sense, Alistair Clarkson in the end, realised that it wasn't going to work and he wasn't going to stay. And on the Tuesday night, contacted Hawthorn and said, we need to do something. And that fast-tracked, you know, a bizarre weekend, or heading into the weekend, and a bizarre Friday at Waverley. So it was messy in every sense of the word, regardless of which camp you're in or whatever. And it's going to play out. It's one of the big moments, I think, in the Hawthorn Footy Club history. And whether it's a good decision or a bad decision, we won't know that for probably 5 years' time.
How do you reconcile what Alistair Clarkson said repeatedly, but in particular at that press conference where he spoke for 13 minutes, you know, about likening it to a marriage, and to what happened, like his complete change of mind a week later? It's hard for me not to draw the conclusion that he was aware or the club had told him that they weren't going to be renewing his contract. That, and sure, you know, your emotions change from hour to hour, but I don't think in hindsight he was intending to stick around.
Yeah, it's hard to know what's in his mindset, but he was so emphatic, wasn't he, on that? It was only 7 days earlier on that Friday press conference that he was so strong about it. Like, if you switch back a little bit 3 weeks ago to the initial media briefing that we were at, in a sense, where it was announced what was going to happen. When Clarko said, and it was a little off-the-cuff comment, you had to come back a second time to get me, we all walked out of there and thought there's absolutely no way he's going to be able to coach the club in 2023. But as the time went on, he was that emphatic that he was going to stick to that word. So we can't say what's going on in his mindset and whether the players coming to him, certainly Ben McAvoy coming to him and Jager O'Meara and saying this is not going to work, but it was a massive U-turn in the space of a few days. Like on that Friday week ago, he said, I'm absolutely coaching this club. By the Tuesday night, he was ringing Hawthorn basically saying, I'm not going to coach next year. So only Alistair can answer that. But I can see why you and myself and others figured that he was going to continue on, because that was how emphatic that he was. And Jeff Kennett assured me on Saturday morning, Mick, that he was stunned to get the call on the Tuesday night, basically saying we need to meet. And I don't think the call didn't come from Alistair, clearly, but the call came from someone else saying there needed to be a fast track, and of this coaching succession plan because Clarko wanted out.
And you talk about Kennett, and I won't say I was surprised because it was pretty much predictable, but, you know, the way that certain sections of the media polled in on Hawthorn's board and particularly Kennett's shameful treatment of a favourite son, and that's pretty lazy assessment of the situation, if you ask me. So Hawthorn, Alistair Clarkson, goes to the club after the Nathan Buckley decision and says, I want to know what my future is beyond this contract, which runs at the end of 2022. And so they say, out of respect, yep, no worries. I think that Clarkson had gone to Rob McCartney, the footy boss, who went to Vandenberg maybe, and it went to the board. They assessed it for several weeks and they came to the decision that in their view, for various factors, they didn't think that Clarkson should be extended. And then they realised, well, they knew they had Sam Mitchell there. I just don't see how that shameful behaviour, it's bad governance. I know Jeff's a polarising figure, but hasn't the board just made a decision, tried to set in place a succession plan, which in the end, Clarko said that he couldn't commit to?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't say it's shameful because you know, footy clubs elect boards to make decisions, and they've made a really bold, strong decision here that Sam Mitchell, they're sort of mapping out the next 10 years of the club, whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision. As I said, we won't know for quite some time. And all this does do is put a huge amount of pressure on Sam Mitchell, because I really do believe that he's going to be a very good coach, but geez, coming in under a lot of pressure. As far as the Jeff Kennett scenario goes, I think he's probably underestimated some of the backlash from the supporter base, but you can understand that. Alistair Clarkson is a four-time premiership coach, and some Hawthorn supporters only know him as the Hawthorn coach. But, you know, again, as far as governance goes, I certainly wouldn't say it's bad governance. We won't know. It comes back to whether the decision is the right decision. You know, all I can tell you is that Jeff Kennett, and you've spoken to him and I've spoken to him, he maintains that it absolutely is the right decision going forward, that this footy club's not going to win a flag in the next couple of years, and they need to start mapping out. And I think you'll find it be a big shift in policy in regard to list management and the like, Mick. I think there's absolutely no doubt that Sam is very much going to go to the draft, whereas Clarko was a top-up man. We know that, and he had great success at times with that. So it's just what I say, it is a really messy situation. It is un-Hawthorn-like, and I think they're all to blame in a sense, perhaps other than Sam Mitchell, who, you know, has been whacked about the head a little bit and probably doesn't deserve to be whacked about the head about.
Yeah, but it's not un-Hawthorn-like. David Parkin was moved on and, you know, similar situation, went to Carlton. I mean, all coaching, Alan Jeans was moved on. I mean, so every club with its coach comes to this juncture. You talked about list management. You hear things about Clarkson's relationships with people. Those supporters that are angry with Hawthorn, I think, you know, maybe try and find out or think, why did the club make the decision that they did? And I'm sure it was a considered decision. But anyway, it's been a big yarn. And the question now is, where does he go? Do you think that Clarkson will coach next year at Gold Coast, Carlton, Collingwood? Or should he take the year off?
I think he should take the year off. I think it'd be better for him to take the year off with a clear head. He's been coaching nonstop, Mick, from all the way through his career. But as far as an AFL coach being, you know, he came in late 2004. Geez, a lot changed in footy in that time. He's told Hawthorn last week that he won't coach next year, that he would prefer to take a year off. I think they're a little sceptical of that. I think they still think that he's a chance. You know, perhaps they even hope that he does coach, so that it might mitigate that payment scenario as well.
Well, sorry, like that, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. I don't think that. And Jeff Kennett was stressed both on Friday and again on Saturday in a phone call that I had that Alistair is absolutely free to coach whoever he wants next year. And in fact, they're more than happy with that, as you know, from a financial sense. That will really help the club going forward. I don't think it'll be Collingwood. I really don't. Don't get that feeling. Gold Coast would be awkward, at least in the instance of next year, given that his son Matt is doing VCE next year, which is a, you know, obviously a pretty big year for a family in any given sense. So to move himself up to the Gold Coast would be not ideal. We know Stuart Jew's under enormous pressure, but he has got that one-year contract. Carlton interests me a little bit because I think there's been so much talk around about Carlton. David Teague still thinks he's the man, and a great win on last weekend. So I think it probably points towards a year off for Alistair Clarkson. But he's coaching again, Mick. He is still a chance to coach next year under the right circumstance. He's a career coach. We know that. We saw it on the weekend. Like, what sort of coach is under the pressure that he's under can then come out and lead a team to beat the Brisbane Lions? I think he's got a lot of coaching left. Clearly, he's only got the 3 more weeks at Hawthorn, but he'll definitely coach again. And that's what Kennett sort of said. He wants to see him, and I know there's a bit of water to pass under the bridge, but he wants to see him back at the club one day in a social sense and a patron-type sense in the way that John Kennedy was after John Kennedy coached North Melbourne in the mid-80s.
But he will. I mean, like Parkin did. Like, I mean, yep. It's just a given that it'll take a little bit of time. But on Gold Coast, it was fascinating that you had Mark Evans, the CEO, who worked with Clarkson at Hawthorn, sitting in the, well, not in the coach's box, he said it was in the statistician's box. I was staggered that Mark Evans was reaching for the excuses bag, talking about, you know, because they got smashed by Melbourne by 98 points. You know, you're talking about how they lost bags and, you know, eating out of brown paper bag. I mean, seriously, how many other teams have had to endure COVID stress, like Melbourne, who had to fly up and back? Yeah. And Tom McDonald did his back on the... I mean, seriously.
Yeah, mate, Troy Sydney and Troy GWS, who have had to be away from their family for so long, and Sydney have been remarkable in what they've been able to do. So I think that's a pretty lame excuse in that regard, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I think the AFL, they'd have to be worried about Gold Coast, wouldn't they? I mean, and no Clarkson, like Lee Matthews... They got when Lee Matthews was asked to coach Brisbane 22 years ago or whatever, he said, "Yeah, okay, no worries. This is what I want. I want the best medical staff. I want this. I want that." And they went. He went up there and he put the Brisbane Lions on the map. And the same thing could apply here with Clarkson. Although, you know, you do want to do your due diligence. You'd want to ask yourself, "Well, why did Hawthorn get rid of him?" You know, it's not guaranteed, is it, that he's just still the coach that got all those premierships. So, but I agree with you. I think Carlton is the one that is more likely, given what you said about his son living in Melbourne. And there's a lot of rich benefactors at Carlton, and they would look at the soft cap as just a little hurdle. So, well, let's offer him whatever it takes and we'll just pay the tax.
So I think that's it. You'd have to pay the tax because, you know, but I think they'd be willing to do that, wouldn't they? It's going to be fascinating. Carlton's, absolutely. They do it in a heartbeat. So Carlton's last 3 weeks are going to be fascinating. They're still a fluker's chance of playing finals. It's unlikely, but you can't see that they would replace David Teague if they did get through to a final. But, you know, Alistair Clarkson is a once-in-a-generation coach. It remains to be seen whether he's still that. But, gee, he's... Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what actually happens. And the Gold Coast, there's so much pressure on them at the moment, Mick. I know that, you know, I know that you've been all over this story with the Gold Coast as well. Something's got to give at some stage, doesn't it?
Well, so we've had Clarkson, as I said, Bucks, and Eddie McGuire went as well this year. So some big stories. I wanted to get your five biggest stories in football history that you've ever seen, reported on, observed, modern era. You know, you could go right back, but we won't. So let's start at five and work our way to number one. And
give me your five.
Start
us
off with number five.
You want me to start us off with number five? What? I'm going to start with the death of Fitzroy. You might not have this in there, but this is really strong in my heart. 1996, Fitzroy has been struggling for a number of years, and then the AFL cruelly and ruthlessly merges them with Brisbane, who on the night of the merger is announced is gloating over this, you know, footy club that, you know, was born in 1883, that was a foundation member. I think there's still some people involved in that decision, you know, and it's a shameful moment in footy history. And I think there's a lot of people who are involved with the AFL, but also the complicit nature of AFL clubs, Melbourne-based AFL clubs, who basically rolled over and let this happen. You can tell I'm angry about it. It is a disgrace. If they had lived another couple of years, they'd still be with us now with the TV rights. They're a great club, and it still breaks my heart that they're not a part of the competition right now.
Yeah, it's a really good point, and you still run into those people every now and then at a party or at a pub. And Hootie Barrett from said, "Oh, well, I was Fitzroy, and now I'm not really anyone." And he's like, "Oh my God, can you just imagine? Yeah, well, I was Richmond, or I was Footscray, right? I mean, the Western Bulldogs, the glory of 2016, if not for Peter Gordon standing up in 1989 to the same people who wanted to ransack and kick out Footscray, you know, they would be dead." Very good point. My number five story is sort of on the same bent, but it's around expansion. And I remember long before I was reporting on football, I was driving down Punt Road, getting some petrol in my old Commodore S-Pack. And
Commodore S-Pack.
I think I was on my way down to play. I was getting ready. I was heading down to play for the Pirates, and I jumped into the servo and I see the front page of the Saturday Age, and it talked about how there was Caroline Wilson story. And she was obviously the chosen one to relay this news, as usual, at Gold Coast and Greater Western Sydney regions to have two new teams. And I'm like, wow, that is a big story. So the competition was going to expand from 16 to 18 teams. Now, what that must have been, 2007 or something?
Around about that time, 2007, I reckon. Around maybe 2000. Time? Yeah, around about that time, I reckon.
Yeah.
Big story.
And that was the commission, Mike Fitzpatrick and Demetri. But just the ramifications of those two teams and the different directions that they went in. I've said till I'm blue in the face, the way that the AFL built Gold Coast was just pathetic with the lack of resources, the lack of experience. When you compare it to the way that the GWS was founded with the experience of people like Sheedy and Gubby and Choco and Craig Lambert and the players that they got, they built a culture from day one. And even to this day, they are paying the price, the AFL, for the Gold Coast Suns establishment. So that's my number five. What's your number four?
Yeah. Oh, I'm trying to work out whether I'm going to have COVID in this. Are we using COVID in this, or is that a world situation, do you think, Michael? Do we include COVID? That's what we need to talk through.
You could put it in there, but it'd be a bit boring.
Okay, we'll leave COVID out. So that was a big story.
The whole world.
So we'll leave COVID out. And I don't want to go into too much detail, but the shock of Wayne Carey leaving the North Melbourne Football Club in the manner that he did was, to me, a massive story. I think the Herald Sun
got this at number four as well.
Oh, gee, we haven't even colluded here. You think about how many pages that the Herald Sun were able to get through in that time. Now, it was a sad story in so many different ways because it impacted on people's lives, and we won't gloss over it too. Well, you know, we won't go over it too much, but it was a massive story in the way footy was played out in Melbourne. And I just imagine what it would be like in the Twitter world of today. It would be huge, wouldn't it?
Well, the biggest name, the best player maybe of all time, premiership captain. You know, it was can you remember where you were when you first heard it? I mean, Robbo tells the story that he came into work and he had a fax left on his keyboard which said, "Hey, big story breaking about this." And I was around in general news, and I remember someone coming around saying, "You know, this has happened, all hands on deck." And I was like, "What? That can't be right." But anyway, it was a bit when they said that Warney had been sent home from South Africa over the diuretic or whatever.
The diuretic, yes.
Anyway, so number four, I agree with that.
Yep. So what are we down to? Three? So number three. I'm going to go the Melbourne tanking saga. I'm going to go the Melbourne tanking saga, which I think was a huge story. Big implications everywhere. And again, impacted on a lot of people's lives. And I know you were all over this from the start. It's a massive story in that regard.
Well, the Victorian regulator, which failed spectacularly, miserably on this topic, was today disbanded the Victorian Casino and Liquor Regulator, was disbanded, and they completely turned a blind eye to what went on here. Everyone now knows that Melbourne deliberately set out to lose matches. The transcripts proving that emerged. You're right. I had that at number two, actually.
So, did you? So in the vault, was it the vault, which will always go down in the footy, the portable, the vault?
Yeah, but you know what that vault meeting was? Another leak out of AFL House. That was designed to make you look at things that happened during the week as opposed to things that actually happened on the field, Macca. But anyway, at number three, I had the West Coast Eagles illicit drugs crisis. I thought tanking was bigger than West Coast, but so what have you got it to then?
So I've got Ben Cousins and the West Coast Eagles drug saga. We're pretty much on the same page. It was extraordinary because it impacted lives. And you know, I always think back to Mike Sheen at the time, thinking about when, you know, and I also think about the courage of Robert Walls, who called the West Coast Eagles out long before it became an issue and basically said that this premiership, you know, had been tainted. And he went and spent a period of time, I think, Robert Walls, at the West Coast. He was invited over there. And he spoke about it in our SAC podcast about, you know, some of the disturbing stories he heard at the time. It impacted on lives, and you know what? It's still impacting on lives, and how that happened, I still shake my head, Mick. That's why I had it at number two.
Yeah, and it's one of those stories that broke right at the end of the era where I felt as though some football journalist would play a role in stories remaining in the dark, and whereas these days, nothing, if it's not bolted down, it'll be tweeted, it'll be posted, you know. Whereas I think people knew what was going on or knew whispers of what was going on in Perth, and admittedly it was on the other side of the country, for a very long time. It wasn't until, it was actually Andrew Rule, and I cover this in my book, The Boys Club, where Andrew Rule wrote about how a player who he didn't name had flatlined in Las Vegas after a binge, and it was a front page story, and it was kind of like, hang on, what? And I think that's when it exploded. And of course, Ben Cousins' addiction got the better of him, and he went to that facility. You'll never forget those photographs of him being arrested in Northbridge with his shirt off, such as life.
Yeah, such as life. Absolutely.
Then he went to Richmond, of course. I went to that Richmond training with Sam Edmund when he came across as a rookie. Remember, he got the last pick in the rookie draft or whatever. And it was like the circus had come to town, the amount of cameras flying over Punt Road. But the thing is, Macca, when I compare that day to the day that Diego Maradona arrived at Naples for his first... Have you ever seen the Diego Maradona documentary?
I have. It's one of the best ever, isn't it? It's such a good...
The stadium in Naples was full to the brim, 80,000 people. Not for a match, but just for his press conference.
It beats Ben Cousins. But I got a little aside to that. My nephew Jamie. He was asked as a top up player. He was playing at a Northern Footy Club team at the time, and he was asked to play top up for a Richmond intra club one game, and it was Ben Cousins' first intra club. So he had a bit of attention. So playing in that game, and he did say that Ben Cousins was the, strangely enough, was the nicest bloke there, and was actually really, really respectful in terms of, he was on the same side, I think, of Ben as well. So the cameras were amazing. It wasn't quite Diego Maradona, but it was huge, wasn't it?
Now, I'm guessing that we've all got Essendon drug saga at number one, because that
really?
Was the big daddy
something else.
Of all
something
stories.
Else. No, I had something. No, you can't have anything else. That was a monumental story. I remember just, but you know, when it broke about the press conference that was going to happen, I remember working on the Sunday Herald Sun at the time, and got a call from Warwick Green. I was up on a Geelong community camp up near the Murray River, and he said, there's some bizarre story about to break. And my goodness, we didn't know it was going to take up, you know, most of your life, really. You spent so much and did such a great job in covering that as well. It was a massive story. It's still got implications today. It still impacts on people's lives today. Will we ever stop talking about it, do you think, Michael?
No. Why it was such a great story was because it went to the heart of the way Melbourne operates. the city that we live in and all our listeners live in, every little inch of the system, the boys' club system, the establishment was lent on and used and abused and to try and get, you know, as a cert, all the different factions try to wrangle their way out of and fight for their place. And I think the full story is now out there. But yeah, that went for 5 years. That was just an extraordinary story. But Mac, we've got to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about some more contemporary things. Well, welcome back, Macca. And you had a big story last week with Eddie Maguire's super plan to pack 100,000 people into the MCG. Does Eduardo just give you a call before he goes on Footy Classified and just say, hey, I've got one for you, Macca?
No, he's very good to me, Ed. He has been over the journey. And no, it was just an interesting plan. And I think it was at a time where we're all thinking about how where the grand final is going to be played and whether we can actually squeeze as many as we can safely into the MCG. And I'm not sure the plan's going to get off the ground, to be honest, but I love the fact that we're out there trying to get as many people as we can into grand final. I think it's probably more likely to be if we can get 60 to 65,000 there. I'd cop that and I'd take that over having 60,000 in Perth. What about you?
Well, the other option that the AFL have got is just to tack on another year to their contract. So it was 2057. I think we got a year back with the Brisbane game. So maybe you could tack on another year, 2059. I'll be long gone by then. But and then that allows you to sell the game to Perth. If Perth seems to be the only COVID clean place, you know. But look, tell me, if you can get 60,000 at the MCG, maybe they'll go for that option. But I think Perth,
I think they will.
Right up,
I think they would take
the
that.
End will be an option.
Well, because you've got to keep Perth as an option. Now, you've got to keep
speaking
everything.
Speaking of Perth, the West Coast Eagles, I sort of reckon there's three clubs that are on the demographic perch. And now, funnily enough, one of them's Geelong, who are flying and might win the premiership. Richmond and Eagles are the other two, and they've just completely ran out of gas. Now, I know Richmond have got injuries, but they've been shocking in the last... I mean, they've lost 7 out of 8 or 6 out of 7. I reckon North Melbourne will beat them on the weekend.
Say that again in the Luke Darcy sense. You think North Melbourne will beat Richmond?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. I do. Don't you?
I wouldn't have thought so. Not when you're still in the hunt for a finals berth. But you never know. North playing great footy and massive kudos to David Noble. But, gee, that's a big turn.
Well, Cunnington, and we wish him well, was a big loss. Yes, but, yeah, everyone was telling me what a great game the Fremantle game was. I thought it was horrendous skills. I know it was wet. But, yeah, Richmond, I don't know what's going on with Tom Lynch, too. He's struggling. I know he's come off a knee. But anyway, it's not about Richmond. It's about West Coast, because they really have completely fallen off the cliff. And that Tim Kelly deal looks worse every time you think about it. I know they got a premiership. So it wasn't a premiership to premiership. But, boy, it's hard to see where their kids are coming from in the next rebuild.
No, it's era over, Mick. Let's be honest. Let's call it for what it is. They're shot. They'll probably play finals. They don't deserve to. And while we're at it, like, anyone who ever throws up a finals wildcard weekend, please just go away and go and sit in the corner. We're struggling to get 6 good teams at the moment, but West Coast will play finals. But that's the era's over, Mick. You look at their drafting in the last couple of years. They've had picks 52, 57, 49, 58. 35. They've got no kids, and they've given away all these picks for Tim Kelly, who hasn't played to the level that we know that he did at Geelong. So that's looking better and better in a sense for Geelong, and so bad for the West Coast Eagles. I just wonder, they're going to get a couple. Their performance against Collingwood was disgraceful and insulting to a champion like Shannon Hearn, who really deserves so much better in a milestone game. I wonder where Adam Simpson's head's at in regard to what happens to him and his role. He's obviously contracted. Does he think that the era is over? Is he got the appetite to rebuild? Or would he maybe at some stage think about coming back to Melbourne and coaching back here? But let's be honest, I don't think Richmond's done, Mick. I reckon you guys are going to be okay. You got 4 picks later this year in the top 30. You got 6 in the top 50. I reckon you're still hanging around, but I reckon West Coast are well and truly gone.
No, I agree with that. I think I was talking about this year that Richmond's cooked for this year.
They'll reload
And they'll get some of those picks that you talk about. That Collingwood game, the stand rule, I've been interested and I've heard more and more Damien Hardwick talked about it post-game, that has the stand rule, and what a surprise, and unintended consequences of an badly thought through rule. Has the stand rule meant that basically you're just getting teams chipping the ball around through the corridor? So you're freeing up the Sharon, as Jared Healy says, but the defence is just pushing back and you're not getting the scoring. I would think that they need to consider getting rid of the stand rule.
Yeah, I reckon I agree with you. They've got to look at it because it's not working in terms of the scoring. Some of those games, as you said on the weekend, we obviously had the outlier being Essendon and Sydney, but some of those games on the weekend, clubs cannot score. And this chipping backwards.
But they don't want to score. They don't want to score. They're it was 40 to 60 in one game because they're just chipping the ball around and it allows you to do that. And Steve Hocking's gone. I mean, it's just extraordinary that they bring in all these radical rules and they don't actually hang around to see the fruition of it. But if it wasn't for COVID, we'd be talking more about those sorts of things.
Yeah, agreed. Because we're probably not as concerned about the standard of the game. We're just trying to get through the games at the moment. But people, we need to get people back to the footy. Now, I'm talking post-COVID here. So they've got to somehow work out a way. And the stand rule, in a sense, we thought it was going to work earlier in the year. It's clearly causing some issues. So I reckon they do need to have a really good look at it post-season. But again, there'll be some trigger-happy decision that'll change that, and there'll be some unintended consequence that comes out. It happens all the time. I'm in favour in a lot of ways of leaving the game alone, but it just worries me where we're at in terms of scoring. And I know talkback radio, as you would hear, people are a bit sick of this style of footy that we're playing at the moment. So,
Get rid of the interchange. Maka KB has been telling it for 10 years, but the
smart man KB
don't listen to him. Let's take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk to you about how good the Olympics have been. Well, Macro, I was a skeptic, I said last week, the Olympic Games, but I've got the bug. I sit up at night and just loving the athletics. What's been your favourite moment of the Olympic Games so far, and also your favourite Olympic moment ever in your life?
I just think the pool has been unbelievably good. Ralphie made a very good point. We had an erstwhile columnist in the Herald Sun not that long ago saying that she doesn't watch women's sport because it's not good enough. I think the women in the Australian team this year, not just in the swimming, I'm talking Jess Fox, I'm talking Sam Kerr. I think the women have been absolutely outstanding, and particularly with the swimming team, they've been outstanding. So I think the swimming, for me, my all-time favourite moment also involves it goes back a while, Mick, to 2000, the only Olympic Games I've ever been to. Love to go to another one. It'd be great down the track. But I was lucky enough to get tickets to through the ballot, and you know how hard that was, to the Cathy Freeman 400-metre final night. And I've been lucky enough to cover a number of different events, but that was, without doubt, singularly the most exciting, best moment that I've ever been to a sporting event, probably including Collingwood Grand Final. That was pretty up there, Mick. But what she did that night after having, you know, being the only athlete to light the cauldron and then win a gold medal was just, it still gives me tingles in the back of my spine. Like it does. It was just such an electric moment. And it was a great calendar night for the athletics that night. You know, there were so many great events on that night, Michael Johnson and, you know, Tatiana with the silver. It was a magical night. Where were you at that time? Do you remember where you were that night?
Yes, I do. I was in a Sydney nightclub, not a nightclub, a Sydney a bar, but I'd actually been to Homebush that day, but I only had the day tickets. I went with Mark Warne-Smith, a mate of mine, and we went out there and then we went back into the city and we watched it, and the atmosphere, you know, everywhere in Australia, the pressure she was under.
Extraordinary.
It's a good point you raise about performing under the pressure, like, you know, you had the athletics legend who pulled out of her events, talking about the twisties and, you know, the mental stress. I mean, for her, Cathy, to do what she did, was incredible. But my favourite moment wasn't Cathy. It was when, I don't know whether it was 84 or 88, I think it was 84, but Dean Lucan,
yep,
winning the weightlifting. I think I was in grade four, and I was telling you, Mrs. Scott allowed us to have, and there's just those gold medals of, I think John Sieben got one in the butterfly.
Yep.
Duncan Armstrong
in 88.
He got into his little 88. They were the moments for me as a kid. And my young son, William, was watching the 100-meter final with me the other night. And to see that Italian bloke win. And you could just see the look in his eye like, wow, this is. And it's when you get hooked on sport. The Olympics. So well done to the Olympic organisation for pushing ahead and giving the world what it needed.
Well, I think we'll
one last one before we go, Macca.
Yep.
Yeah, we were. Is the St Kilda decision to appoint Nick Del Santo as the AFLW coach of the club? There are no women coaching any of the AFLW teams. What needs to happen here? Because it's... You know, the first inaugural coach of an AFLW premiership was Bec Goddard.
Yep.
She got pushed out of the system, God knows why. What's going on here?
No, it is quite bizarre. I'm not a person about who wants quotas or anything like that, but it is extraordinary that none of the 14 AFLW teams are coached by a woman. Hawthorn will change that. When Hawthorn actually get a team in and Jeff finally gets his way in, Bec Goddard will coach Hawthorn. But it is extraordinary. I don't know what we can do to change it. And this is not a slight on Nick Del Santo at all, because he could be the right man or the right person for the job in that sense. So it's something that we need to look at. And it's something we need, as I say, I'm not into quotas or anything like that, but surely there needs to be one. You would think that, you know, there's enough really quality women around with coaching backgrounds. I can't believe that Bec Goddard is currently not coaching in the AFLW. I'm still astounded that she was replaced the way she was. Extraordinary, isn't it? What's your view?
Yeah, I think there's, I can see, like, if you're St Kilda and you're trying to teach young girls how to play footy, and, you know, that Nick Del Santo would be someone who's obviously played the game at the highest level, and he would know. You know, you can see why they've appointed him, of course.
Absolutely.
Same with Half at Carlton. But there needs to be, and I don't believe in quotas. You know, I don't think that that's the solution. But
agreed.
There needs to be a more proactive push from the AFL to encourage, and maybe it's around soft cap relief or something like that, so that more women get more opportunities. You know, but again, COVID, because of COVID, a lot of these issues are flying under the radar. And let's hope COVID goes away very quickly.
Yeah, because we need some change. We need some change. And again, it's not a slight on Nick Del Santo, because having sat in a media box with him, a radio media box with him, he's such a good thinker of the game. But I'm sure there are plenty of women out there that are exactly the same. So I think it's incumbent on the AFL that we need to at least have a look into this and just to see where we're going.
100%, Macca. Mate, we've run out of time. We will chat to you next week, and thanks for today.
Good on you, Mick. Have a good week.